Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting entrepreneurs. These are people who are authors, they are speakers, they are small business owners. They may be virtual assistants, web developers. They may own the best dry cleaning shop in town, but they are go-getters. They have wonderful stories to share, and they are really excited to freely share everything that they've gone through, their business wisdom, their tips, and some actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I'm excited to welcome author, blogger, podcaster, speaker, and consultant Andy Paul to the program. Andy is the author of Amp Up Your Sales, Powerful Strategies That Move Customers to Make Fast, Favorable Decisions. Amp Up Your Sales is on Amazon's list of the 20 top-rated sales books of all time. That's impressive. He is also the author of Zero Time Selling, 10 Essential Steps to Accelerate Every Company's Sales, which won Top Sales World's Award as one of the top three sales and marketing books of 2011. He is recognized by Forbes as number 7 on their list of the top 30 social selling influencers globally, and Seismic Incorporated recognized Andy as one of the top 25 sales enablement resources in 2015. He has a podcast. His podcast is called Accelerate with Andy Paul, and it's a go-to resource offering the latest insights from the leading authorities in sales, sales enablement, which I have to tell you, that's a new term to me. I'm going to ask about that. Leadership, coaching, and personal development to help sellers accelerate the growth of their sales and their businesses. And since founding Zero Time Selling Incorporated in 2000, Andy has worked as an advisor to CEOs and entrepreneurs to transform sales team productivity and individual sales performance. In other words, you want to listen to this man. He's got good advice. So, Andy, welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am big time excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Denise. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. What in the world is that term? It's, you know, I thought
sales enablement.
A lot about it. Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Well, it's coming into being as sort of a, I would call it a buzzword, because it, you know, it actually has real meaning behind it. And so it encompasses a range of things, if you will, from, and people sort of talk about in terms of, you know, what do you need to do to be able to put your salespeople in the position to sell more efficiently and effectively. And so enabling sales, basically. And oftentimes you hear this applied to specific software applications and software tools that help salespeople in that job. And they can range from something as simple as an email tracking program, similar to a Yesware or a Tout app that tell you when the recipient of your mail has opened it. And if you had a link in the email, they tell you whether they've clicked on the link or how long they spent on that site that you had associated with the link, or if they clicked on an attachment to your email. You know, that's considered sales enablement, all the way to sort of higher level things that have to do with, you know, how do you build your list of prospects, how do you automate your sales process, and things of that nature.
So the old 3x5 cards are out the window.
Sales is becoming more and more a data-driven.
Right.
Data-driven function, and sales enablement really speaks to, okay, how do you really harness that data in order to sell more efficiently and effectively?
Well, that makes sense, and once you explain that, I realized I use a lot of those tools. I just didn't realize that's what they were called.
Yeah, you're enabling your sales.
I am. Well, I'm keeping track of my brain is what I'm doing. Did I send that email? Did they open that email? Oh, good. Now do I follow up?
Well,
you know, that type of thing.
But that's
right.
It's a perfect example for so many companies, especially smaller companies, but that really aren't, I guess, aren't even really aware that these tools exist. And it's a point I keep making in my podcast and my writing is, and in the workshops I give, is that entrepreneurs, small business owners, you know, it's not enough just to have email when you have, I use an example, these email tracking programs, like a Yesware, a TouTap, and there's others that have it, is that you think about just this basic value that's delivered to your salespersons, your salespeople, is that they send an email to a prospect, automatically get information about whether or not they opened it. Just that fact, knowing that they opened it. But then imagine that they had sent a proposal, and you can know now not only how often they come back to the email that had the proposal, but you know, how long they spent looking at it. I mean, it's you have this just basic data that comes by. What could you do with that if you're a salesperson? And you can do quite a lot. And so, I mean, I'll send an email to a potential client, and you know, maybe you know, I know they opened it. We had a conversation, but then let's say maybe 2 or 3 days later, I see that they opened it again. I'll get a notification on my desktop. I'll pick up the phone and call them. And I'm not going to say, hey, I understand you just opened my email, but you know, I'll have some reason to call them, and they'll say, oh, that's funny. I was just thinking about you because I was just looking at your proposal.
Right. Yeah, that freaks people out when you can tell them, hey, I saw you just opened that 14 seconds
ago. Yeah. That's usually, yeah, you usually don't want to do that, but it gives you an opportunity
right.
to call them. And then they're
right.
very like, gosh, we're sort of the same wavelength here. This is sort of interesting, and it really leads to a lot of good conversations.
Well, and not only, now that I realize what that is, not only is that good for sales teams, but it's good for people like me, and this is why I use it. You know, I have teams of virtual assistants and web developers flung all over the United States, and I need to know that they're reading my emails, that they're getting their tasks, that they're, you know, they're following through. And I find that tracker, I guess, is probably a better way to put it. But I can tell when they've opened the email, and if nothing has been done on that project in 24 hours, but that email has been touched 6 or 7 times, we might have to have a discussion.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, I use it for the same purpose. I have a virtual team in various locations, and you know, it helps to know that they've opened an email that I've sent. But we use other tools as well. I mean, there are other sales enablement tools that are you know, more collaborative, like you know, one that's really popular that, again, I use on my team, even though we're very small, we're, you know, max sort of 3 or 4 people, depending on what's going on, is an application called Slack. And, you know, it's a web-based collaboration communications tool, internal collaboration communications tool that is really slick and can really replace a lot of email communication back and forth. And if you know people are sitting at their desk, you get a chance to sort of collaborate in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I use Slack a lot. I mean, it's a great, great tool, and it's free. I know you've been doing this for a long time, and I guess one of my questions is, are you meeting resistance with some people who just don't want to, and I can hear them say, I'm not a techie person. I mean, are you meeting resistance when you try to introduce some of these things?
Yes. So I tell the story about
that.
I tell the story about a client that I had about 80 salespeople that I did a workshop for a little while ago, and yeah, they're fairly active on social media in terms of reaching out to people, but when I started talking about some of these basic technologies like email tracking, and I always devote a part of every workshop to talking about the tools that I like that I think they should know about, and it was just these blank stares. They had never heard of this. You know, this was fairly recent, so it was very surprising, and so yeah, the penetration of these new sales enablement tools, sales engagement tools, you know, some are called by that term as well, is really very thin, right? It's the sort of top strata, but I think for anybody who's selling a product or service, I would start there. If you're going to make an investment in technology, I'd start right there and say, okay, let's give my salespeople some more ammunition that they can use to go out and reach out and sell more effectively to the prospects, and maybe it costs $5 $10 per salesperson per month. That's really nothing based on the return that you'll get for it.
That's exactly right. And You know, and they're really, like Slack, you mentioned Slack, it's just slack.com. It's a really simple tool to use. I mean, as a for instance, one of my clients is a neurologist in the East, and he was having all kinds of trouble getting his team to kind of pay attention. They would have to log into Google. And I said, you need Slack for starters. That way I can communicate with you at a distance as well. And you also need some walkie-talkies. So they put those things in play. They got a good walkie-talkie system, and they put Slack together, and now they're not running around bumping into each other.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, Slack is invaluable, especially if you're exchanging a lot of files or you're collaborating on documents.
Right.
It just makes it so much easier to share than dropping into email and doing it the same way, which is still relatively easy, but Slack makes it much easier.
Mm-hmm. And you can use it on all of your desktops. You can use it on your iPhone, your iPad. I mean, you can use it on the go, so there's that. Do you happen to know why there's resistance to it? Have you kind of, you know, drilled down to find out why people are saying, oh, it's just one more thing, I don't want to learn it? You know, what's going on?
Well, it's not so much the learning, because a lot of times it's the sales team. Once they hear about it, they really want it. So, I mean, you know, sales teams evolve to be, you know, younger in age, in average age. It's really, I think, more about the management thinking that's just an expense.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay, well,
you know, there's always,
go
I mean,
ahead,
so
I'm
many
sorry.
Times there's a, yeah, I mean, there's you know, sales is considered sort of a necessary evil, right? In many cases, by many small business owners. And, you know, there's this reluctance to say, okay, it's hard enough for me to justify what I'm getting in terms of return from this person as a salesperson, but now if I have to start spending more money on that. I mean, it's sort of the same reason why they don't spend money on sales training and the professional development of their sales team. So it's just like, well, where's the return?
Well, that makes sense. One of the things that, I mean, you know, and I know, when people mention the word sales, people kind of go, ooh, you know, even
yeah.
though we are all in sales, every one
we
of
are.
Us. I mean, if you want something, if you want to get something done, watch a three-year-old get his way. They're excellent. You cannot beat a three-year-old for sheer sales capability. I mean, we're all in sales, whether we're dating or we're putting out our resume. I mean, we have to know how to present ourselves, right, and how to present whatever it is that we're trying to sell to you. What,
right.
what advice think, can you give people for that? Because, look, honestly, even though people know at gut level they're in sales at some level, they still resist it.
Right. Well, it's really a perspective, and the perspective has to change. So the generally held perspective of sales is that the job involves trying to persuade, either ethically or unethically, persuade somebody who doesn't really want something to buy what you're selling. And, yeah, that's just not the case. You know, sales is really, it's a service. You have to really think about it. I'm providing a service to this person and or to this company. And that service is, what I'm selling is something that's going to improve their life, their business, their sales, their profits, you know, whatever that dimension is that you're addressing. And so you actually are providing the service. And they're not going to be talking to you if they don't want that service that you have. Now, whether yours is the one that ultimately decide to buy, you know, we can talk about that point later. But you have to really consider yourself that selling is a service that you provide to a buyer. It's not something you do to them. It's something you do with them. And in my book, Amp Up Your Sales, I lead off the book with the sort of description, a new definition, if you will, of what selling is. And it's based on a quote that I saw that Jeff Bezos, founder and CEO of Amazon, talked about an interview that he did with the Harvard Business Review. And there's this great quote, to me, it really encapsulates better than almost anything I've ever seen what selling really is. And he said, and the quote is, we don't make money when we sell things. We make money when we help customers make purchase decisions. And that's really what selling is. You're just trying to help the customer make a purchase decision. You're not trying to sell them something. You're trying to help them make a good decision. And these days, really, customers really want your help to be able to make good decisions faster because they're increasingly busy. They also have, you know, been bombarded with all these multiple sources of information about products and services, and they really need help sort of navigating through the clutter. And if you're able to become that trusted advisor that can help them do that, then you're going to increase your sales.
Oh, I agree. But, and listen, nobody does it better than Amazon. I mean, I'm spoiled now. I do all my shopping online. Like I told you the other day, once Amazon can deliver 30 pounds of fresh crawfish to my house, I'm done. I'm never leaving again.
Which is
probably not going to happen anytime soon. But I'm very
spoiled. Well, I know. They'll be coming in with their drone pretty soon. They could get up to Youngsville, Louisiana pretty quickly.
Oh, let's hope so. but here's the thing. I mean, you go on Amazon site and they've got all these, you know, you pick out one thing that you need. I went on there the other day. I needed baking sugar, you know, the big clunky baking sugar. And they gave me all kinds of other things that they thought I might need. Turns out they were right. I did need clothes. I did need a couple of other things. Now I'm so spoiled with Amazon. I'll go on to like JCPenney's or Sears and they're not making those recommendations. And I think they're leaving a lot of money on the table. Because I get in, I get out, and I don't go shop.
Yeah, well, I think they don't have the same thing about Amazon is you buy such a range of products there.
Right.
They have all this data about you that
they do.
They now have got so much data they can start correlating, you know, you across different product areas. You know, if she buys this, she's more likely to buy this over here in this category, and you know, based on your past history. So, you know, those other vendors don't sell that wider range of products, right? So it's harder for them to serve up the same type of recommendations.
I hadn't thought of that. All I know is when I go there, I'm mad because they're not Amazon. So I am a little bit spoiled. But how does that translate into the, you know, somebody like me, you know, who, I mean, obviously I'm selling sales, you know, I'm selling services and I'm selling some products. So, you know, I'm not your typical big store, big box store, but I still have to have my marketing plan. And I think that's where so many people just kind of fall on their faces. They don't really understand the difference between sales and marketing and when the two should be combined. Is that something that you can speak to?
Yes. I mean, well, yeah. You know, what I see with small businesses and general entrepreneurs is that they tend to gravitate toward marketing because marketing is easier, it's more fun, it doesn't involve actually having to pick up the phone to talk to somebody. And that's the part of sales that no one likes, right? That's why so many people gravitate to online marketing is that, hey, I can sell something without ever talking
right.
to anybody.
Right.
And some people are quite good at that. But for most businesses, most products are sold at the end of the day. You get a prospect, whether through your marketing or you're going out making, you know, cold calls or however you do that, is you got to pick up the phone and talk to somebody. And, there is sort of a lot of talk about how marketing and sales are aligned, but you really have to think about, you know, are you appropriately investing in marketing to generate leads for you, you know, generate interest in the product
right.
or service.
Right.
And most companies, even though they like it.
I don't think you should do one to the exclusion of the other. I really don't.
You can't. And these days, given the tools that are available online, things that you can do for free, social media as an example, blogging, you know, things that, you know, content marketing, which is sort of a buzzword, but, you know, as an individual business, you know, are you using a blog, are you using your social media to be able to tell to your customers, advertise to your customers that you're passionate about the products and services you sell and you've got some opinions about them and you understand what's happening in the market and you're communicating this through your blogging and through your social media, and so that when people begin now to look for a product or service like yours, and they come to your website and they read your blog and they think, wow, these guys really understand this business. They understand, that means they understand my business. I'm going to call them. I'm going to reach out and touch them and ask them to come help me. So, it's all free. I mean, yes, you got to pay for people to help you do that and so on, but
right.
you know, it's not like you're paying for advertisement where, you know, am I really getting that return on that advertisement here with your content marketing, with your thought leadership? You know, you can test it and see if
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, gaining the reaction and the traction that you want with your target audience.
Well, and the thing with advertising, I don't know about you, but I try to avoid advertising as much as I can. I really do. I know that I'm going to need toilet tissue. I already know it's on my list. I don't need to be advertised. to. I know that I'm going to need paper towels. I already know what brand. And I get that these are things that they have to do, but most advertising, and maybe it's just me, because I do live in a very digital world these days, but I don't know that advertising is really has the impact that it used to have. And I'm curious to know, what do you see in that arena?
Well, I think it's multifaceted than it was before, right? You know, even big companies and consumer product companies are not just, yes, they're still paying for the TV ads, but, you know, go online. I mean, they're all over the place, right? You can, if you once visited a company's website like Amazon, I mean, every place you go, Amazon's going to be serving you ads about the things
cookies.
That you had had been searching for, yeah, based on cookies. So it's the modalities have changed, the mediums have changed, but yeah, they're still sort of doing these same things. You know, they've got, yeah, we've got a certain amount we're going to devote to, let's say, the big retail or consumer brands that we're going to devote to advertising, but we're still going to use all these new digital media channels. And so, I don't know, I've done some research a couple years ago with the total spend on advertising in the United States, and yeah, conventional advertising is still the largest chunk of the dollars, but increasingly all these other forms of advertising are really gaining in terms of the amount of money being spent on them to reach either business-to-business buyers or business-to-consumer buyers.
And that makes sense because people are spending more and more time online. You know, people are walking across the street looking down at their phones. They're not paying attention to the cars. I mean, everybody, that's a personal peeve. But, you know, people are just spending more and more time online.
Come live in Manhattan. I was going to say, come live in Manhattan.
I would get peeved by that. No, I couldn't do it. I mean, I really couldn't. I mean, I live kind of way out in the country, and I see people doing it even out here, and I'm like, really? You're going to get run over by a farming truck. Look up. Stop that. But they don't. Again,
yeah.
It's a personal peeve. But what I would like to know, you know, we're talking about sales. We're talking about salespeople. What are some of the biggest challenges that salespeople are facing now with all of these kind of different changes in how you communicate with your prospect or, you know, your community? I mean, what are some of the biggest things that they're seeing now that maybe they didn't see maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest challenge is for salespeople is how do they stay relevant to the prospect? So when the prospect has all these other ways to find out information about your product or service, you know, why do they still need you as the sales rep?
And there certainly have been
industries where, you know, sales reps have, it's one of my favorite words, is disintermediated. You know, they've been taken out of the equation, right? They've been taken out of the middle, which is what disintermediated means, of the transaction between the customer and buying the product. So, you know, it's certainly in business-to-business space, that is the biggest challenge for salespeople. You know, how do they stay relevant? And then on top of that, then, is the next order is, and that has to do with, you know, how are they continuing to develop not just their selling skills, but more importantly, how are they continuing to develop their understanding of their customers, right? So that they can become this trusted advisor, which is sort of the key word that everybody sort of, holy grail that people are trying to achieve, is that, you know, you're just not showing up and talking about product facts and figures and so on, but you're leading with questions, right? You're trying to discover what it is that the customer is really trying to achieve with this product or service that they want to purchase. What are their goals? What are their objectives? And then, you know, synthesize that, the answers to their questions into a solution that delivers the value that they need. And this, we get back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, this is a service. I mean, the term consultative selling has been out there for quite a while, but it's really becoming more and more important, even in, you know, even relatively low dollar value sales in the business-to-business space, is that the customers have a lot of demands on their time. And only one of those is buying a product or service that you're trying to sell. So why should they give their time to you? Why should they invest their time in you? And that really, that's sort of a fundamental question. I talk about this being the bargain that's at the heart of all sales. If the customer invests some of their time in you, and their expectation is they're going to get something of value in return for that time. And if they don't, then they're going to stop giving you time.
Well, and that makes perfect sense. I mean, insurance sales, I know insurance sales can take multiple interactions sometimes, you know, depending on the type of insurance. And honestly, the best insurance people that I've ever come across were the ones that said, you know, I don't think I really have the product for you, but let me see what I can find out with somebody else. And then eventually they can find out what it is that I need, either refer me away, which you wouldn't think is going to be the best thing for them, but I trust that person. I am going to refer people to them, even though I may not have been able to buy from them.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And that's,
yeah, that's that whole building trust. I may not buy from you, but I like you.
Well, but I provided a service to you, and part of that service was that, hey, we weren't the right fit at the end of the day.
Right.
But it was still coming from the grounding of being a service. And, yeah, you were impressed that they had the integrity to say, yeah, we don't have a good fit, but let me refer you to someone who does. That pays itself back multiple times over. And, you know, I've experienced that multiple times in my career, and I've seen other people that do the same thing. And it's really quite simple, is to say, okay, well, the service doesn't stop once you learn that they're not a good fit for you. It continues if you say, yeah, I can refer you to someone that can help you.
And that goes back to, you know, creating that kind of relationship. You know, you have to create that trust and that value. So basically, you're not just sell in the face. You're actually, going back to what you said at the top of the show, you're performing a service. And if you cannot give them the service that they actually need, you're still performing a service by saying, you know, this isn't going to work, but let me see what else I can do to help you. And it sounds counterintuitive, but honestly, it's one of the best things you can do, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, people have a different, I think have, one thing that's changed is the relationship between seller and buyer. And certainly we've all seen movies and TV shows from a long time ago where, and we've sort of this, you know, tradition, you know, sort of fable has sort of arisen, which is that yeah, if you're a sales guy, you got to build this deep personal relationship, and you're going to take your client out to lunch, or you're going to play golf, and so on. And the fact of the matter is that buyers really don't have time for that anymore. And we've gone through, you know, continuous sort of corporate restructuring, and we all know in the workforce these days that partly because of the restructuring, partly because of the influence of technology, is that, you know, companies are doing more with less, right, with fewer people. And people wear more hats, they have more responsibilities. And buyers really don't have time for that relationship, the mythical relationship that they thought sort of existed, or salespeople always thought existed with their customers. You know, they want to be able to get their job done more quickly because they got so many things to do. And research backs that up, that increasingly buyers, at least in the business-to-business side, is they want to make decisions, purchase decisions faster. In fact, once they'll make them up to 40% faster. What's holding them back are salespeople, right? Because the salespeople don't have the knowledge, don't have the understanding of their business. You know, can't be this trusted advisor that the way that the customer needs. And so we put that in the context of what that relationship is that the buyer wants with the seller. It's a value-based relationship, but it's also a sort of a show-me type relationship. It's, you know, what have you done for me lately? You know, it has to be based on what you produce for them, not just are you nice and are you look good in a suit and, you know, you're well-spoken. And I use the analogy of my relationship with my golden retriever, who, you know, I walk him 3 times a day and I feed him 2 times a day and I play with him 1 a day, and you know, I know he loves me completely, but when I leave town, somebody else comes in and walks him 3 times a day and feeds him 2 times a day, and I know he loves that person completely. And that's what your buyers are. You know, it's what have you done for me recently? And if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. And so you have to have the service orientation that is producing something for them, helping them get their job done, helping them succeed at what they need to succeed at.
You just reminded me that my dog loves my best friend Maggie almost more than she loves me. Seriously.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up a painful point.
You, It's just one of those random thoughts. I actually have video of, I can't even tell my dog, her name is Abby Rose, I can't even tell her that Maggie is coming until Maggie's about to pull into the driveway, because she loses her tiny little mind. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and, well, and I guess that can...
I had the same thing. But my dogs absolutely were infatuated with woman Rosa that had cleaned my house for 15, 20 years. And they knew which day she was coming, and they would sort of sit by the front door. And when she showed up, they wouldn't leave her alone all day. I mean, she would eventually sort of have to, like, put them out in the yard, because they would just be right with her all day long.
Oh, it's the craziest thing. We can't figure out why. The only thing I can think of is that Maggie picked her up one time from the vet. I had a migraine, and Maggie said, I'll bring her home, and that was it. You know, if anything happens to me, Maggie's got a dog, whether she likes it or not.
Yeah.
But anyway, so one of the things, and thank you for sharing that story. I love to hear dog stories. Listen, what I wanted to ask you, though, while I've got you on the line, because sales is important, and I know people just go, ooh, it's a... I can't tell you how many times I've heard, oh, it's an icky subject. It's not an icky subject. But you need to understand, from what I'm hearing from you and from what I've read in your books, that sales training is very, very different from sales education, and I would love for you to touch on that. And if you've got any for instances, I would love to hear those as well. Because this is important for our audience.
It is, and it's sort of a passion of mine, is that we hear and we see the stories and read the research reports that are done, the surveys that are done, and so on, that, you know, business leaders generally think that sales training is a waste of time. And there's a reason for that. And part of the reason is that, you know, like most companies, is, hey, we're going to bring somebody, just give you an example, we're coming up on the start of the year. Very typical, companies will have a sales kickoff event. And they'll hire a speaker, somebody like me, to come in and, you know, give a talk, and they run some workshops and, you know, be there for a full day and get people really sort of jazzed up. And then 30 days later, according to all the research that's been done by scientists and so on, is that people will have forgotten over 90% of what they learned in that one day. So companies are sort of addicted to these big event training that the people who are trained forget most of it very quickly. Almost as soon as they start walking out the door, they start forgetting what they learned. And so there's very little in the way of sort of continuous reinforcement in training in general, but also in sales training specifically, that needs to go on to sort of reinforce the lessons that are learned in the classroom. But on top of that, there's a couple of things at play. One is most companies don't actively encourage their sales team to become active learners, meaning to invest their own time in reading and developing knowledge about their customers and learning more about how to sell and sales, specific sales skills or questioning skills or listening skills, whatever the point may be, on their own time, and or even provide some company time to do that on a regular basis. And it's just, it's missing. So, I mean, if great interview question that I like to advise people to ask when interviewing a sales candidate is ask them, you know, so what sales book are you reading right now? And you get, man, in the vast, vast majority of the cases, you know,
they've never heard of Zig Ziglar or, you know, any of the candidates. They're not reading any of those?
They're not reading anything at that time.
Oh, wow.
And so, again, I don't know if this is necessarily just a sales issue, but I mean, I'm familiar with sales, and it's most important sales, because we talk about this idea, how do you stay relevant to your customers in order to make sure there's still a job for you? You know, the economy continues to evolve. Well, you have to become more educated about your profession and your customers and what you're trying to achieve and do and what you're trying to help your customers achieve and do. And this requires a commitment of time. And so education, to me, is the sort of broader umbrella about, you know, learning culture. It's sort of learning the why behind the how. Sales training is really focused on this is how you should do things, but very little context given in the broader sense about why you should be doing these things. And to me, that's a huge missing element. And so part of what I'm trying to do, and I'm sort of my sole crusade at this point in time, but I've been talking to more and more people. I think we'll get people enlisted is how we start looking at this again a little more holistically from a sales education standpoint is how do we educate people continuously throughout a year, not just once or twice or not, you know, even quarterly, which is a lot for a lot of companies. How do we continuously educate them and train them? And so...
Well, does this fall under the company responsibility or should it be,
it's both.
Like when you're in front of a crowd, I know you do a lot of speaking in a lot of workshops. When you're in front of a crowd, how are you or are you able to stay in touch with these people and help them along with continuing education? Is there any mechanism in place for that right now?
Well, some companies will invest in that and some won't.
Oh.
And so, but certainly from the sales field standpoint, there's, you know, one of the great things about sales spaces and marketing the same way is there's no shortage of people who are writing about sales every day. Literally hundreds, thousands of sales bloggers, they're, you know, providing free resources that salespeople can go out and read. And, you know, people that, like, follow my podcast or they follow my blog, you know, those people are investing in their time in improving themselves. And maybe they have to pay their own money to go to a workshop sometime or buy some books or, you know, get a subscription to a mastermind group or something that helps them. So I salespeople tend to think, look, I'm not, if the company doesn't provide it, then, yeah, I'm not going to do it. Right? They rely on the company to be the provider of sales training, sales education. And the companies don't do enough, and instead they're saying, well, why aren't you guys and girls, out investing your own money in this? And it really needs to be a combination of both. You know, I think that as an individual, if you're in sales, you should be spending about an amount equal to about 5% of your total pay on your professional development. Whether
that's,
again, going to workshops,
buying. Right, and you would think if they're really in sales as a service, I mean, clearly you want to make money. You want to be profitable. I mean, you don't want to go out and spend all your money and your dry cleaning money and your lunch money and your gas money and come home broke. But if you are doing what you really think is a service, which, you know, you've said and I agree with you, then it would appear to me that you want to be the absolute best that you can be, which means self-education, which means getting into a mastermind with somebody like Dave Ramsey or Dan Miller or with you. You know, it just seems to me that it would be absolutely instinctive that they would say, I'm going to invest in my future. And it also seems to me that the people are saying, well, if the company's not paying for it, they're probably not the salespeople that you want on board. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, it would be great if everybody was as motivated as that to make that investment. But quite frankly, they're not. And part of it's a culture thing. You know, the culture needs to change on the company side. It needs to change on the individual side. So a program that I'm starting and that I've got a couple of companies so far are going to be doing this in 2016. It's a brand new, where the companies have agreed to set aside 20 minutes a day in the workday for their sales team to read every day. And so what I'm doing is I'm working with them is I'm curating a reading list for them targeted to what their specific needs are. And there's going to be basically a book, and they're going to invest 20 minutes a day. And that's 15 of that is going to be people reading the book, and 5 of it is a reflection. So they're all going to be given a notebook, and they're going to write down in the notebook about questions or thoughts they had about what they read that day. And so it's a reading and reflection period. And it's a very small investment of a day. And the fact is, you know, in most sales teams, salespeople are not engaged with customers 8 hours a day. You know, they have time in the day to be able to do this. But the payoff is at the end of this year, and it'll be in every subsequent year that they do it, is their sales team is so much smarter than they were before. They've read 12 relevant important, essential texts about sales, customer service. It's going to be a mix of things, you know, the psychology of selling and buying. And just by continuously being engaged in it, they're not only going to learn more, they're going to retain more. Because as they're learning it every day, the opportunity to go out and apply it instantly in their selling. And we're going to combine that with sort of quarterly webinars to answer questions and so on. But these companies are making this commitment to invest some of their time and a little bit of their money into this, what I call, sales education program. And we're really excited about it because we think it does what we expect it will do. It'll be transformative for the companies that do this and for the salespeople that are working for it.
Well, Ed, that does make sense. I mean, I need to introduce you to a friend of mine named David Long. I think he would be a great, great person for your podcast. But his company has what they call a book club. And they get together. I mean, they read a book, the entire company. They read a book, they get together, they talk about the book. And it's amazing. This company just keeps going from strength to strength to strength, and he really supports them in that. So if you like, I'll make an introduction.
That'd be great. Yeah, this past year we've done this with several companies just over a one-off basis where they wanted over a period of a month to do some training. We did a virtual book club. So everybody in the sales team would read the book, and then at the end of it, we had about a two-hour-long virtual book club that I facilitated. And people are really engaged with it in a way that based on the feedback from the management, that they had never been before in any of their other training. And so our hope is with this new program that we're rolling out, that we're testing with these companies, that they're going to see the same thing, that there's going to be a level of engagement, but more importantly is curiosity, because I think one of the things that happens is that learning is self-reinforcing. And so as you learn more and as you engage more, you then become curious to learn even more. Because part of the function of learning is that you begin to understand how much you don't know. And I believe that what will be sort of the outgrowth of this is that not only will these people become, again, more skilled at what their jobs are and more knowledgeable about the environment with their operating, is they become more curious and want to learn even more going forward. And the level of professionalism and skills and aptitude, as I said, throughout the entire company are just going to continue to elevate.
Nick, do you mind sharing some of the books that you recommend?
Sure. It really depends sort of company by company what they need. But, obviously they read my books. But depending on the company. and the reason that mine fit in there is my focus and the things that I write about is really has to do with what you as a salesperson are doing, you know, face to face with that customer to deliver something of value that helps them make a decision more quickly. So I'm in that hand to hand sphere. That's where my books come in. You want to understand how to build trust, how to create positive perception in the customer, how to deliver value to them. You know, that's my phase of it, and you know, I think I do that better than anybody else. So they get some of that from me, but there's higher order books. There's some books around process, and I've got one client that process is really important. So there's a book called Predictable Revenue by a gentleman named Aaron Ross that really has spearheaded this whole trend toward what I call sales specialization, where there are certain things that happen in the sales process from prospecting to closing. And instead of having one salesperson do the whole spectrum of things, is you have specialists. And so you're increasingly seeing that as one of the major trends in selling these days, is that sales teams have teams of people they call sales development reps, so their job is all they do is outbound prospecting. And when they get a lead that's qualified to a certain standard, because then they pass it over to the account execs, and the account execs, their job is to take it the rest of the way and close and get the order. And we're seeing increasing specialization in sales. So depending on what the company's sales process looks like in their market that they go after, then it might be a book like Predictable Revenue, which is sort of the playbook for how to set up your company to do that. You know, another book I really like, that I like people to read is The Psychology of Influence by Robert Cialdini, which, you know, just educates people about how people make decisions. Another book I recommend oftentimes is called The Paradox of Choice, by Schwartz, but that is a great book that talks about how people make decisions. And as a seller, you really understand that psychology. You know, how people make decisions to give you some of their time, and how do they mentally go through the process of evaluating their options and making a choice. And so, you know, that's an example of some of the books that just depends on the situation that the customer has.
Are you finding that people, you know, I'm assuming that a lot of these salespeople just either don't have the time to read or they don't know maybe where to go to find books. Are you finding that once they kind of get into that mindset, they're like, ooh, and their brain just kind of opens up and expands, and, you know, then they start looking for other possibilities to kind of engage themselves and their prospects in the sales process?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
it would seem that, you know, once they kind of open up their minds that, you know, things just kind of start clicking along.
Yeah, well, I'd referred to that before. So once people get engaged with us, they start becoming curious about what they don't know, right? And so they want to keep going. And that, to me, is really one of the primary goals of the sales education program that we're laying out and working with companies on, is that it stimulates people's curiosity. Because the lack of curiosity is really of so many salespeople. Because not just from a learning standpoint, but it applies to how they deal with their prospects and their customers. Because the primary tendency for salespeople is, when they first engage with a customer, is to talk instead of listen. You know, people have various phrases used in the sales business. You know, so they show up and throw up,
right.
You know, spray and pray, and so on.
I've had people actually talk me out of something because they wore me out.
Yeah. And so I have what I call the ask, don't tell formula, which is, for salespeople, is that anytime you feel the need to talk or to make a statement, ask a question. Now, one of the ways you could do it is rephrase your statement into a question. But
right.
If you think about that as just a way of operating, not just in sales, but in life in general, you know, if you turn the table and say, instead of trying to tell people how much I know, I want to ask a question about something I don't know, then your path through the world is going to be much more fun, much more interesting, and much smoother. And it's especially true in sales. And I interviewed somebody for a show, a gentleman named Mark Roberge, who's written a great book called The Sales Acceleration Formula. And he talks about an exercise he does to practice this, is that he'll go to, like, a social function, we'll say a wedding, for example, and he'll see how long he can stay engaged in conversation without ever doing anything but asking a question.
That would be very easy. I mean, people love to answer and respond and talk about themselves. I would think you could go an entire conversation without ever having to do anything but ask a question and respond.
Well, I think you're at the right mindset, yes. But for most of us, you know, we want to give our own opinion. It is good training to say, because you're really focused. At that point, you're focused on that person. And, yeah, I give people the example. I talked about this on a show recently. As I had the opportunity back in 2008 to meet President Bill Clinton, he was at a fundraiser for Hillary when she was running back in 2008. And we had gone to this event, and it was at this billionaire's estate in San Diego. And he gave a short talk. And then I had to be in the right spot, or maybe I was part of a certain group or something, where he came down the line and shook hands. But when he got to me and to everybody else, he has this ability to make it seem like there's no one else in the world but me. Or you. Maybe he's talking to you. And it's just, I'm sure he's not the only politician that can do that. But it is remarkable and stunning. And my takeaway from that was, wow, how can we train people to do that, right? Because if you could do that as a salesperson, if you could just make that customer understand that you are present and you are there just for them, and you're not distracted by anything, it's just them. Like, yeah, I said when I shook President Clinton's hand, it was just like, whoa. I even forget the question he asked. He asked some question. But I could just feel the full focus of him. And, you know, salespeople, we have to learn how to do that. You have to learn how to shut out the distractions. You have to learn how to, you know, forget about cell phones, forget about the prospect or the customer with what we know, and just be there for them. Just be present in the moment. And increasingly, you hear in sales, you know, that if people are familiar with this practice of mindfulness, which is, you know, sort of a meditative technique, but it's all based around the concept, sort of a Zen concept of being in the moment, being present, you know, not worrying about the past or the future, just being centered in that moment. Customers get it. Customers are blown away by it if you can do this. And if you can combine that with asking the right questions,
right.
This gets back to a point we started talking about in the really beginning. It's one of the challenges for salespeople is how do they, in a world where competitors are flooded with new competitors, and basically everybody that's trying to sell something pretty much looks alike to the customer. The first line of differentiation, and really the most important line of differentiation in your ability to win an order, is you, the salesperson. How you sell at the end of the day is more important than what you sell. This is really important for people to understand, because most companies deal in markets that are pretty heavily commoditized. I mean, you do, right? There's thousands of people that do what you do. There's thousands of people that do what I do.
Oh, yeah, many.
And so, the differentiation at the end of the day is not necessarily my message, so that helps, but at the end of the day, it's me. I'm the differentiation. And this is true of whether you're an individual or you're working for a big company. You are that product. You are that company. It's how you sell. It's how you help the customer, how the service you provide, the way you're responsive to their needs and the requirements, the way you understand what they need. That is how you can differentiate yourself and win the business. And so being present, being there, is such a critical skill.
Now, I have to ask you this, and I think I know the answer, but is this something that can be taught? I mean, you know, Bill Clinton has legendary charisma. I mean, like him or loathe him, you cannot mm-hmm. deny that he's incredibly charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, is kind of a gift. You're born with that. But he has taken it to just alarming lengths. He really has. He's very, very good at it.
he's very good at it.
But the thing is, charisma can't be taught. I get that. But when you're talking about, you know, this focus and this attention, you know, really just kind of lasering in and listening, that can be taught. That can be a learned behavior, yes?
No, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And you know, some of the critical things is that we sort of touched on a couple of points that are really important. You know, the biggest thing to remember, to keep in mind, and you're a salesperson, is if you want to be present, you got to shut up. Okay? That's one. You have to listen. You have to ask, don't tell. Right? Because if you're asking, then listen. Don't think about what you're going to say next, because you can't know what you're going to say next until the customer finishes talking. And so you have to sit and listen. And a good technique is when a customer finishes, pause for 5 seconds before you say anything. So customer talks, they finish, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004, now you can say something. Because then you're going to take it in.
What is the psychology behind that? I mean, I think I know,
forces,
but what is the psychology?
It forces you to process what they're saying, what they just said.
Okay.
And it forces you out of saying, well, this is my pat response to that question.
Right, and it also lets them think that you're really thinking about it, too.
Well, but you don't want to just have the pretense of thinking. You actually want to force yourself to think about it. So, so you know, it's not a charade for the customer. It's what you actually
would
do.
No, I understand. Right.
And so the goal is that you listen, and in those 4 seconds, you come up with what your response, right? You don't need anything more than that. It's what's your response based on what they just told you. Because what they just told you should inform the question that you're going to ask next. And you don't know what that is until they finish talking. But you know, salespeople, that even to this day, we've got all this knowledge about how people make decisions, gather information. And even the best companies, I get calls from them all the time trying to sell me stuff. And it's like, wow, even the best companies are still not doing this right. Now, there's some companies that do, but you know, it's hard. So that's why sales education becomes so important, why you need to continually reinforce the lessons that change behaviors in a permanent basis.
But let's assume that we've got salespeople from all over the industries, whatever industry they happen to be in. Let's assume that this interview is going to make it to a lot of people in sales or thinking about going in sales, or people like me who have to have sales as part of their, I have to sell. I have to.
Right.
So,
right.
And frankly, I really enjoy getting on the phone and making that sale, because by the time we've got on the phone, they're pretty well pre-sold. And it's just a matter of me listening and saying, okay, this is what we can do, and this is going to be the end result. I actually enjoy that process, but I know a lot of people don't. But what would you tell people who are listening or who will be listening? What are some of the first, let's say, 3 steps that they can take right now to start, you know, changing their mindset a bit, you know, changing things up to where they are listening, they are learning, they are educating themselves?
Yeah, I think, and we've touched on them already, is you lead with questions, right? Ask, don't tell. Every opportunity you have, ask a question instead of talking about yourself. And you know, people don't care about your corporate capabilities. They don't care how the company got founded. If they did, they've already learned that on their website. What they care about is themselves. And you know, it's a trick that novelists have a quote in books about John Steinbeck who talks about, you know, people really are only interested in, and paraphrasing, are really only interested in stories about themselves. And that's what novelists sort of key off of, right? And they stop listening. So ask the question, let them talk. You know, second thing is continually educate yourself about your customers. You know, you have to be able to deliver something of value to them. And so when you think about this basic service orientation to sales that we talked about, is how do you make, in a deliberate fashion, how do you make every sales interaction count? So if you can do that deliberately, then you'll be well ahead of the game. And the way I talk about that is that, you know, what value are you going to deliver every time you interact with a prospect? What's the goal? What's the value you're going to deliver that's going to help them move at least one step closer to making a decision? And if you can't answer that question, then you're not ready to have that next sales interaction. So make every sales touch count. Ask, don't tell. And for me, the third thing, which is again, it's a real passion thing with me, that it's such an easy thing for salespeople to do to differentiate themselves from everybody else, is to be what I call absolutely responsive to the customers and your prospects. And to be responsive in sales doesn't mean just to be fast. It means that you're fast with the information the customer needs to move forward in their buying process. And this is an aspect of selling that we all have ultimate control over. How quickly we respond or are responsive to our prospects. And you know, the feedback I get from people that read my first book, Serial Time Selling, where I introduced this concept, is you know, people that are 30, 40 years in sales said, you know, I had never really thought about that, and they've changed how they sell, and it's made such a difference for them because it's something that's under their ultimate control. How responsive am I to my prospects or my customers? If they send me an email, how quickly do I answer? If they send me an inquiry, how fast do I respond with the information they need? it makes.
And again, you would think that would be intuitive, but apparently it's not.
It's not, because people always assume, I've always got time for that. Well, I can get back to them. No, you get back to them now. And there's been studies that have done, been done that said that, that have found, as researchers from MIT did this back in about 8 years ago, but they've updated it since then, is looking at responsiveness to response times to online leads that are generated. And what they found is that there is a direct correlation to your ability to ultimately get an order from the prospect based on the length of time it took you to respond. And if you were responded in 5 minutes versus 30 minutes, and most people think 30 minutes is really fast, but 5 minutes versus 30 minutes, your odds of actually contacting and qualifying that customer as a prospect are 21 times greater. 21 times greater. Just the difference between 5 minutes and 30 minutes. So
that's considerable.
It's considerable, and it makes a difference. And so for me, in my business, you know, I'm obviously kind of set the bar for myself because I wrote the book about it. And I'm extremely responsive. But yeah, for me, the worst thing is like to be on an airplane flight where there's no Wi-Fi, and so I can't get email and so on. So if somebody's, you know, called me and left a voicemail, or they sent an email, and I'm on the plane, I can't return it. You know, it's mortifying to me personally, because I know it makes a difference. And so,
wow.
Yeah, this is a huge part of my sales practice in terms of what I do when I deal with prospects and what I teach people. And it's just a, you know, simple, you know, tool that people can do, and I give this out, is to say, you know, I may get an inquiry from a potential client or a question from an existing customer that comes in via email, is, you know, I leave my response. If I couldn't get back to them within 5 minutes, I'll leave with my response. Maybe it's 15 minutes I'm getting back to them. I'll say, I'm sorry, it takes so long to get back to you. And there, people are blown away. Hey,
Again, it sounds intuitive, but I know for a fact it's not, and I'm always surprised by people who will, you know, send me, I need to talk to you right now, and I will stop what I'm doing, and I will, you know, attempt to make, you know, return contact, and they're, I'm busy, can I talk to you tomorrow? Really? What the heck was that all about?
Well,
was this a test?
That,
what was that, you know?
I just think people listening, they're in sales, they're a business owner. This, you know, there's very few things in life that you can control completely, right? If you're a salesperson working for a company, you can't control the product. You can't control the service. You can't control the pricing. But you can control how you sell. You can control your responsiveness. You can control how knowledgeable you become about the product and the services you're selling and the customers you're selling it to. And if you just focus, and this is my book, Zero Time Selling, is all about this. If you control the aspects of your sales process that are under your direct control as an individual, then those other things don't matter as much, because you're going to blow the customer away with your responsiveness. You're going to blow them away with your ability to ask the great questions that uncover their needs. And they're going to want to do business with you just based on how you sell to them, because they think, if you're this good based on how you sell to me, wow, I think you're going to be good to work with long-term as a supplier.
Right. And again, that makes sense. Listen, we have stopped. We're still recording. We're not live any longer. The people in the chat room can't hear us, but they can download the episode after a bit. Do you have like 5 more minutes? Because I have another question.
Sure.
Okay. In your books, you introduce a concept called the peak end rule in selling. What is that? And I know you say it's very important for salespeople to understand it and incorporate it. So if you've got time to explain that, I would love that.
Sure. So this is based on research done by a Nobel Prize-winning economist called Daniel Kahneman. And he, in doing research about how people make decisions, formulated this rule called the peak end rule. And based on testing, what he found is that when people go through an experience and they look back on that experience and make a decision about it, that they really only remember or take into account two primary things. They take into account the peak experience or the peak event during that experience and the last event during that experience. And, you know, you talk about well, an example was given, I think I remember correctly, it was two people went to, different people went to Hawaii on vacation. You know, one went for 2 weeks, one went for 1 week. And you think, then they said, you know, asking a question, would they go back again? But the one that, I guess, had gone for 2 weeks, we thought a better vacation, their last event there was, you know, like a flight was delayed or something, or they got a bad meal, versus the people that are just there for a week and, you know, their last event was more positive, like a sunset cruise or something. The people have a more positive last experience are more likely to go back, even though, you know, they may didn't have as qualitatively or even quantitatively as good a time as the couple that were there for 2 weeks. But, and he has better examples, and I can't recall them off the top of my head, but the way it applies to selling.
Well, think about marriage. I mean, you know, you're good for about 10 years, and then after that you hate him or her. And all you remember are the really icky things. You don't tend to remember that first flush of love and happiness.
Well, that's true.
Kumbaya. So it's kind of the same thing. You remember they're icky, and you tend to just go, oh, okay, well, the rest of it was okay. But that's really not the truth, is it?
Right. Or the peak event was something that was negative, not positive.
Right.
So the way it applies to selling is, you know, you're going through a process. The customer's going through an experience with you. And when they get down to making the decision, you know, they're going to be taking into account primarily the peak event dealing with you through that process and the last event, which could be the proposal or presentation or something. Peak event, that could be just your rapid response to their first inquiry. Right, because, you know, studies have been done showing that 73% of sales leads are never followed up. Think about it, 73% of inbound sales leads are never followed up, based on research that's like a year or so old. But so assume it's still relevant. Well, if you do respond, and you respond quickly, and you respond with questions and information the customer needs, meaning you're being responsive as I define it, that's a peak event. Your peak event could be the first contact you have with a prospective prospect, meaning that you've, in essence, you sort of won the deal at that point. You don't have the order yet, but you pretty much, you might have won the sale just on your first contact. So that's differentiating based on how you sell. And the first impressions that you create are so powerful. There's a whole science behind people's perceptions of other people. And there's, I use the concept first perception, not first impression, but perceptions are hard to change. People form them instantly about the blink of an eye. And yet, once they're formed, they're extremely difficult to change, for better or for worse. And so, if you are responsive, you do make that first interaction with the prospect as a positive, responsive event, compared to a competitor that could be a bigger competitor with more market share, more experience, and if they don't get back to them, you're more likely to win that order. Just based on what happened that first event, which is the peak experience. So that's the peak end rule for sales. Focus on every single sales touch has to be accorded equal importance, because you never know in advance which one's going to be the peak experience for the customer with you. So treat them, bring your A game every sales interaction.
That is excellent advice. Andy, where can people find you? I know you're an author, you're a speaker, you give workshops. Where can people find more information about you?
So they can find me on my website at andypaul.com. That's andypaul.com.
That's easy enough. There you go. Well, listen, Andy, thank you so much for being with me here today, and I thank you for taking that little bit of extra time. I really appreciate that, because I really didn't understand. I had read enough about it to where I thought I might kind of get it, but you explained it so beautifully about the peak, and I think that's really important. If anything, that's probably the big takeaway that I've gotten from you today. I mean, I know that I need to respond instantly, and I'm pretty good about that. But I think where I'm not really paying attention or really wasn't aware was that I need to treat each interaction like it's a peak. So thank you for that. I really, really appreciate that. Well, listen, everybody.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. It's been wonderful chatting with you. I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did, and I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and safe travels.
Well, thank you. You too.
Thank you. Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Andy Paul. I will not see you next week because next Friday is Christmas Eve and I have company, but I would like to wish everybody very happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and I will see you next year. Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.